The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good morning to you and welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. Holding up. So let's find out a little bit about Dr. Sandra Boxall. How did you get into your profession, which is obstetrician, neurologist? Did I get it correct?
And gynecologist, obstetrician and gynecologist.
And gynecologist, yes.
So, all right, so I became interested in obstetrics and gynecology after I was like my fourth year in medical school and I was trying to decide what I wanted to do. And I was able to view actually a cesarean section as a medical student. And then with that, I kind of fell in love with surgery. And then I did a little bit more research on the field and I really genuinely like women's health on a whole. So then I went into obstetrics and gynecology where I can deliver babies. I can do surgeries. I have to do a lot of education on women's health. I do infertility, reproductive endocrinology, and we do a little bit of cancer as well.
So from your experience in the field and the topic for today is cervical cancer, how prevalent is it and how do we go about testing?
So cervical cancer is actually the number one killer gynecologic cancer across the world and in Trinidad as well. The good part of it is that it's a preventable disease and it's actually one of the only cancers that is preventable. How do we go about testing for it? We do that by screening. So the three ways we can actually prevent cervical cancer is through screening, which is pap smears, etc., through education and awareness, which is what I'm doing now, and through early diagnosis and treatment.
Mm-hmm. And how early is early in terms of doing something as invasive as a pap smear?
So pap smears are generally recommended once the patient becomes sexually active. And for some, some bodies, so different parts of the world do different recommendations. We in Trinidad tend to follow the UK recommendations. I'm American trained, so I follow those as well. Mm-hmm. But essentially, you start doing pap smears as early as whenever the patient becomes sexually active within a year, or if the patient turns 21 or 25, then you can start doing pap smears then. The reality is that the cervix is not really exposed to the virus that causes cervical cancer, and that virus is called HPV or human papillomavirus, until the patient becomes sexually active. So generally, like nuns who've never been sexually active are really not at risk as much. I mean, 99.8% of cervical cancers are caused by this HPV virus. So if it is that you've never been exposed to HPV, then the likelihood of getting the cancer is a lot lower. Mm-hmm. The reality is that most of us, though, are not nuns or monks for that matter. And then, like in the Caribbean culture and stuff, you know, we're always thinking about our legacy and the next generation, and we want grandchildren and all of that. Mm. But then we almost don't want them. You want to get the grandchildren, but you don't want to protect them from the potential things that come along mm-hmm. with the exposure to, you know, getting those things. So I have to kind of put it in context for my patients sometimes for them to understand.
Mm-hmm. And as you said that, my mind instantly went into sex education and seeing as you say, there's such a taboo topic that giving out that information at the appropriate time and age appropriate, of course, you get a kickback or a pushback, which tends to leave a lot of people in ignorance and unaware. How can we counteract that or at least reduce the misinformation that is out there?
That's where the awareness and the education comes in. I'm actually a part of the Sir Optimus of Trinidad and Tobago, and we have a cervical cancer working group, which I'm on, and we have a big campaign going on just making people aware and explaining how vaccines can prevent this preventable disease and take it out of the context of, you know, sexual activity. And HPV or the vaccine is not a license to then allow the children to have sex. That's not what it's about. You prevent them getting the, if they get exposed, then potentially you would prevent them even before they become exposed. So that's where the vaccination comes in. And I have to have, you know, long conversations with my patients. And then we've been doing a lot of outreach in different communities regarding, we need to be aware of what's happening in society. The reality is that the children are having intercourse, right? And they've been doing it from our generation and the generation before ours. But we know so much now that we should be proactive in how we approach it. It's not that you want them to, you don't want your child to end up with cancer. No parent, I think, ever wants their child to get cancer if it's now or it's in the future. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at it from a big picture perspective. I can prevent them from getting measles, mumps, polio, etc. Why can't I prevent them from getting cancer? So that's how we have to approach it. And again, if you put it in the context that yes, when they grow up, you want grandchildren, and you want, so then they're not going to be, you know, celibate for their entire lives. So why not protect them before they get to that stage?
So then let's venture into the vaccine itself for HPV, the human papilloma virus. It has been suggestion for a few years now that young girls and young boys as early as 11 or 12 should take the vaccine and probably should be on you know, that list of vaccines that children are to take. Can you give us a little more information on what the vaccine is and what it really attacks?
Oh, sure, no problem. So I'll go back a little bit before I move forward. Mm-hmm. But it's great that we're talking about this because August is actually National Immunization Month. Mm-hmm. And I am very much into making sure that my children included get all their vaccines before they head back to school and the like. But the HPV virus comes in different forms. There's something like 70 plus subtypes of HPV, right? What we found is that about four of them are the ones that cause most of the cancers. About, 16, 18, 33, 35 are the ones that cause much of the cervical cancer. So essentially what the developers of the vaccine did was they made a vaccine that carries those subtypes in it. So it could potentially protect the children, or it could be adults too, from those particular subtypes, which potentially would decrease the risk that they would get the cancer in the future. Now, it's actually available to children starting as early as 9. So it goes, and you can get it through the health center in Trinidad free of cost between the age of 9 and 26. So we actually try to make it a part of just the routine vaccination, cycle, where they get their measles, their mumps, they get their, what is it, chicken pox, all of that. It's included as part of that, to try to ensure that by the time they get to the age, even if it is when they turn 25, they would already been vaccinated from 9, so they're covered. You understand? It's safe. It's been on the market, I would say, from when I started training, which is probably 25 years plus, so we have a lot of data over the last probably 25, 30 years where the vaccine has been used and the outcomes are fantastic. There's certain countries that have used it and certain population of children, and they haven't gotten any cases of cervical cancer at all. It doesn't cause any, I mean, it's like any vaccine, right? So it's gonna probably hurt a little bit when you get the shot, and then the arm is a little sore for maybe an hour or so, and then it goes back to normal. We've rarely had any major side effects or I would say allergic reactions from the HPV vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so we consider it absolutely safe. And if you could prevent cancer with two injections, to me, that is completely worth the effort.
And it's just two injections. It's not something that you have to take yearly. It's not a like a booster shot.
No, essentially when it came out, it used to be three. You used to get one and then you would get another one a month later and then another one 6 months later. So it was a profile of three shots that they would give. They've made adjustments now, and then some here, I think we're giving it, you can get two shots, sometimes three if you need a booster, but generally it's two. The other thing that has happened over time as well is that they've advanced the vaccine. So instead of it only carrying four of the subtypes that cause much of the cancer, some of them even carry as much as 9 now. So we're getting better at what we're doing, and we're saving more lives. And the preventable nature of this condition is what makes it sad that women are still dying of cervical cancer in their in their 40s. I mean, if I tell you how many of those I've seen, it's actually genuinely heartbreaking, because when the diagnosis is made, for most of these patients, they're in their reproductive years, they have young children, they have, you know, families to take care of, and to tell somebody that you have this, you know, that's a very unfortunate thing to have to do. And it's also really hard to treat.
The thing is, you gave an age limit, I think it was up to 26, you said? Persons yes. over that age, what is there for them to do?
If you're over 26, you can get it, but you won't get it at no cost through the health centers.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Like in private practice, I mean, I have patients who are honest, like in their 40s, and they want it. And the only thing is then you'll have to pay for it. But the ministry covers it through the health center, and you can get it at no cost. Up to 26, 9 to 26.
Mm-hmm. Someone sent a message here at 3061065. That's our WhatsApp number. And for those who have questions on the topic, you can, you know, send your messages as well. Some years ago, certain religious organizations dissuaded people from using or giving children the HPV vaccine. I felt that it was from a place of ignorance. Glad that there is more data now. How do we navigate through that conversation, because like I said, the religious organizations that would promote no sex before marriage, and after marriage you find cases where women would develop these issues. How do we navigate through that discussion?
I mean, I think we've come a long way in those discussions, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And we are more, I guess they're more open-minded, that it is not a license to have intercourse. And yes, okay, fine, you want to wait until you become, like, till you're married to have sex, that's fine. When you think about that, right, eventually you're going to have sex. Mm-hmm. So if it is you vaccinate at 9, and at 9, how much did the baby knows? I mean, the children will know, okay, fine, they're going to get their shots. You as the parent, whose role it is to take care of the children, if you look at it not from a short-term, and you look at it long-term, you understand how important it is. And I think the religious organizations included have come to that realization, and we're not getting as much mm-hmm. of a kickback as we were getting before. But the more we educate and we make people more aware of how safe the vaccine is and how much benefit you can have, and, you know, focus on what is it that you expect of your, you know, your children. You want them to live healthy lives. So you protect them now for the future. It's just, that's just how it is. Just like we give the babies the vaccines for hepatitis so that when they get exposed to it, then they know how to deal with it. It's the same thing with the HPV vaccine. It's not saying you expect them to get exposed to it tomorrow. You prep them now for what it is that is going to happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go into what cervical cancer looks like, what it feels like, so that persons may have an idea of what the symptoms are. What is it exactly? Let's get the full breakdown on it.
Okay, so cancer on a whole is where the cells that are in the body start to mutate, or they start to change in such a way that they don't grow or behave like normal cells. And so instead of doing what they're supposed to do, they grow outside of their space and they change their character so they don't behave like how normal cells behave. The same thing happens with the cervix. The cervix is the mouth of the womb, or a lot of people know that your cervix will open to 10 centimeters when you're having a baby. That's the part of the body that we're talking about. Essentially, you get abnormal cells that arise there, and then they spread up the cervix, into the uterus, into the pelvis, and it can spread all over the body, which is called metastasis. Now, how would you know that you have cervical cancer, or how can you screen for cervical cancer? That's where the pap smear comes in. So the pap smear is when we put a speculum or a device that opens the vagina so we can see the cervix, and then we could take some small cells from it. It's not a scraping, it's not a biting, it's not a pinching, none of those things. Essentially, we just use a spatula and a very small, like, brush, take cells off, send it to the lab, and the lab can tell us if they're seeing abnormal cells. Now, the pap smear is critical because it can actually catch cells that are abnormal before they convert to cervical cancer. So from the time that you get exposed to HPV to the time that you actually end up with cervical cancer, sometimes that can take 10 years. So if it is that you're going for your checkups and your pap smears, even if you're not doing it every year, you're doing it every 2 years or so, somewhere in that time period, you would have been able to pick up these abnormal cells before they become cancer cells, and then you can address it. The other thing with HPV, it doesn't mean that once you've ever been exposed to HPV, it's going to stick with you for life. A lot of young women, so less than 30 years old, will actually clear the HPV on their own with no abnormalities on the cervix. So it's not like once you get it, like once you get HPV, this cascade of events must happen. But for some people, it does. And so we're trying to, with doing the pap smears, we're trying to catch those people who have the abnormal cells developing even before it becomes a cancer or a tumor that's much harder to treat.
And let's go into treatment now. Is it that you have to do surgery to remove the cervix? Does that happen? Or is it depending on the stages of the appearance of cancer?
Correct. It's always stage dependent. So if it is that we catch it very early stage, like right before the cells turn into cancer, we can actually do a procedure where we just take off the tip of the cervix in the office. And there's really not that much downtime with something of that nature. Now, if it's bigger, and it depends on how big it is, because sometimes you can see it on the cervix, and if it's big enough for you to see it on the cervix, there is a decent chance that you're probably at that point already starting to have spread underneath, and then, you know, radiation, chemotherapy, and all that would come into it. Some of the patients, we do have to do surgery. Surgery could be of the cervix, or it could be a hysterectomy. It just depends on the grade or the stage that we catch the tumors at, and if it is that it's spread. And the problem with cervical cancer, too, is that sometimes by the time you see it, like when you put the speculum in and you can actually see it, by then it's already started moving, you know, out in the pelvis. So that's why if you can catch it before you can see it, which is with the pap smears, then you stand a way better chance of, if it, even if it is there, you can manage it, you know, with an office procedure or something like that. And we can avoid surgery, radiation, chemo, hair loss, all the other things that go along with that, you know, diagnosis.
So inevitably early detection and screening would give you a better chance at battling and winning cervical cancer.
Absolutely. The other thing that I want patients, or I try to educate patients on, is things you have to look out for. So, I mean, ideally you should be seeing your gynecologist or your GP who's doing your pap smears at least annually or every 2 years, let's see. And then you have to look out for things like if you're bleeding after intercourse, or if you're getting bleeding in between your periods, or if you're getting any kind of abnormal pains in the pelvis, if you're getting pain when you have intercourse, if you're getting bloating, anything that is kind of out of sorts, super heavy periods, any changes that are not consistent with what you consider to be your norm, those things need to be evaluated, because sometimes those are indicators that something isn't right, which will then warrant us to do an ultrasound or do some other additional testing, and we might be able to catch things earlier on the, you know, on the course before it becomes cancerous.
Now, with young people, they've been doing a lot of research and preventative measures. Let me give you an example. In terms of breast cancer, many young people have opted to remove the breasts entirely just to avoid, you know, the even the idea or thought that they would get breast cancer, especially if family members or there is a history of cancer in the family. Would there be preventative measures like that for cervical cancer?
There, yes and no. So first of all, cervical cancer is not genetic. So it's not like breast cancer that runs on a gene and, you know, it's higher risk in certain families or things like that. With cervical cancer, it's generally an exposure situation. And as a result, I have some patients like, well, nobody in my family has cancer, so I don't need to screen for cancer. Like that's how people are about it sometimes. But then we have other patients who want to be very proactive about how they approach their health, which is great. And so let's say we have a patient who's completely finished her childbearing. So she doesn't want to have any more children. And she is concerned that the cervical cancer happened in a family member or somebody she knows, and she just wants to eliminate that risk. Yes, you could potentially do a hysterectomy, which is just removing the uterus itself, not the ovaries or anything like that. If you remove just the uterus and the cervix, then that will minimize your risk potentially of getting cervical cancer. But I would say those patients are probably few and far between. Mm-hmm. Especially in a context like this where we have testing that's available that you can screen for years prior to the incident, you know, effect. Mm-hmm. And it's not anything in, well, I guess I would say it's not invasive. Maybe other people would say it's invasive, but you know, you can screen for it in other ways. And also I have a lot of patients who, like, if it is that they do pick up, we pick up HPV on the pap smears, or they have precancer cells, they may opt to say, you know what, I have precancer cells, I'm not taking the chance, let's just do the hysterectomy. But then there's other patients who come up with precancer cells and they've never had any babies before, and they want to keep their options open. So in that case, we have conservative management that we could do to facilitate the patients, and everything is kind of patient dependent, kind of what their likes and dislikes are and what they're okay with.
Mm-hmm. Now, for cervical cancer, the HPV virus is known to cause that. From the male perspective, are there things that men can do to help us ladies in the prevention of...
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, it don't take just us alone, you know what I mean, to do the tango.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about that? There was a study a few years ago, well, that showed that men whose wives had cervical cancer mm-hmm. were at higher risk of penile cancer, which makes sense, right? Because mm-hmm. the two things are touching each other. So, you know, if it is that men, boys, etc., are vaccinated, then they won't carry the virus that potentially exposes the female partner to the virus. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. And so that's the role that they play in terms of vaccination. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have great screening tests for men yet, but I'm hopeful because there's a lot of research coming through the pipeline soon. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, we don't really have HPV testing that we can do on men. Mm-hmm. But their vaccination has a huge impact on how much of it is out there and passing it on to their partners and potentially helping us to decrease the burden of cervical cancer if everybody, you know, is vaccinated, or we get at least an uptick in mm-hmm. the amount of vaccinations that are happening, especially when it's free.
Yeah, and that information is readily available at our health centers as well, or online. Is there like a page for information from the Trinidad and Tobago Cancer Society where persons can research?
Yes, you can do that as well. And even under Ministry of Health, and all of the health centers that do routine vaccinations are stocked with the vaccine. Mm-hmm. All of them. And so they have which days that they give. They do childhood vaccinations on some days and they do different ones on different days. But if at any point someone wants to just walk into any of the health centers, they could do so and get it if it is that they're interested.
Mm-hmm. All right. And any other last tips that you'd like to give us, Dr. Boxer, on, you know, how to be aware of this dreaded disease and how we can prevent?
I think I want to just mention that a lot of what is out in the social spheres regarding pap smears and cervical cancer, some of it is wrong. Pap smears are not painful. They're not supposed to be painful. If you had it done and it was uncomfortable, go by somebody else and get it done, because it is a critical part of screening. And if we could get screening up, we will decrease the burden of this virus. And yes, okay, fine, you know, it might be a little bit uncomfortable, but when you think about it, if that can affect how your whole future works out, I think it's completely worth seeing your GP, your gynecologist, and getting checked out to make sure that there's nothing happening with you.
Mm-hmm. And let it be done every year, you said, is a year.
Ideally,
to 2 years.
I mean, how would the, again, different bodies manage the screenings differently, but I would say at least you should be getting a pap smear. And the reason is because a pap smear is a screening test and it's not a perfect test. So if you do it once and it's normal, that doesn't mean it's going to be normal forever. You know, you pick up things about 80% of the time, but if you've done three in a row and all three are fine, then the likelihood of you missing something is a lot less. So mm-hmm. one pap smear doesn't mean that, okay, I did it once, I'm done. It's a continuous screening process, and we need to be aware that it's a continuous reevaluation to make sure you know your body is changing. We need to be checking for changes on the cervix as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Boxer, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time and coming to talk to us about cervical. I know some people say cervical.
It's fine.
Cervical.
You can say it either way.
Right. Because, I mean, sometimes, you know. But I appreciate you coming and talking to us about it.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.